Hey friends, we wanted to take a quick minute and personally invite you to two really special gatherings coming this fall. First, our intentional motherhood retreat in Portland, Oregon, October 15th through the 17th, and then our intentional fatherhood retreat in Austin, Texas, November 12th through the 14th. Honestly, these retreats have become so much more than events for us. They've become spaces where people encounter God, experience healing, honesty, friendship, freedom, and real transformation. We live in a world that is full of information. We have podcasts, books, content, advice, but transformation requires more than information. Sometimes you need space, you need community, you need honesty, you need the presence of God, and you need to get around other people who are fighting for the same things you are. At these events, we've watched marriages soften again. We've watched fathers come out of hiding. We've watched mothers breathe deeply again. We've watched people feel seen, known, challenged, and deeply encouraged. And we would genuinely love for you to join us. You can learn more and grab tickets at intentionalparents.org. And for all things fatherhood, you can visit intentionalfatherhood.org. We hope to see you there. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Today, we are going to talk about sex, intimacy, and marriage. We're going to talk about a husband's perspective, a wife's perspective, what's needed, what's not. What does the Bible say? What are practical things that we can do if this is a hard thing to talk about? Also, maybe even to move towards in your marriage. And I get to do that with you, my wife, today, because it would be weird to have this conversation with your parents.
I didn't think about that. Yes, it would be weird. And it would also be weird for you to be having this conversation with somebody else that wasn't me.
Well, that is just a taste of the level of fun awkward we'll have this week. Actually, this is coming from a really interesting place. We are coming off of the wonderful high of the first ever intentional fatherhood retreat. And I mean, it is something to process. We are still processing it in real time. I just got off the phone with somebody about different angles and things that they were processing. I mean, it has been an ongoing situation this last week or week and a half since we got back. And so, I mean, this was great. You actually spoke there. You got all the men gave her a standing ovation before she even talked, which was great. And you were one of the only female communicators, which we were so glad. And I'm so glad you spoke there. Thank you. It's not easy to talk in front of 600 plus dudes, but.
Oh, they made it easy. They made it easy.
But what, tell me for you, I mean, we'll process this in other places and have conversations, but for you, what was some of the highlight for you for that?
Gosh, I just keep saying it felt like such an honor to be in the room and to get to watch what the Holy Spirit was doing. One, that was incredible. But I think the thing that will never leave me and will forever change, I think, like how I even communicate to men and women, especially on the topic of marriage or family, was to see, you know, 600 something dads so passionate about their families, about Jesus, about serving their wives. It was interesting, by the end, my mom and I were feeling something very similar. Whereas I was just feeling like, I feel like I want to like apologize to all of them on behalf of all women for how we have treated you and how we've assumed that you're not all in like that. And it was so beautiful to see these men like given the opportunity to really just express how passionate they actually are about their families. And I think another eye-opening thing for me was to see how much those men carry that is not acknowledged. Like we talk about that women carry a bunch of unseen stuff and it's not acknowledged.
Yeah.
But to listen to these men, to watch them worship and be emotional and confess to each other. And then the conversations I got to have with so many men who were just asking me questions about how they can love their wives better, how they can love their special needs children better. I was just like, man, you guys carry a lot and you're more invested than I thought you were. And I just, now I'm like, all the women need to know that.
Yeah.
But it felt like standing on holy ground. It really, really did.
There was these moments, just worship would start and men would just go to the front and get on their knees and start crying. And other men would come pray for them, totally unprompted. And that was one beautiful highlight. At the very beginning, Justin and I actually, we were talking about the beauty of confession, and we realized we could not ask everyone to confess if we weren't willing to do that. So we knew that we had to confess to each other on stage, but we were not allowed to know what the other person was confessing because we wanted it to be sincere. And so like at the end of the first teaching, we both were like, okay, I guess we get to go first, because we were leading these guys in confession. Yeah. So we confessed on stage. This is not easy, by the way. It's not a fun thing to do. Very embarrassing in one sense. And also, I think healing, confess your sins to one another that you may be healed, I think is healing in the other. One of my highlights was a guy was there who was in his 70s. Phil was there as well. And what was so cool was to see him turn to Phil and start confessing. He didn't know. And then obviously Phil did not tell me what he was confessing, but he did say this guy had shared with him that this was something that he's, I think, either never told anyone or only told one other person. Mm. And to realize that level of depth of confession was happening on night one. And then the men that took it seriously, there was guys in hotel rooms giving each other 24/15 tattoos, 24/15 from Joshua 24/15, as for me and my house will serve the Lord. And in real time, I was like, if I could get a tattoo on stage right now, I would do it. And
you the guys tried.
I literally tried. Yeah, I did ask the guy. I was like, can we do this right now? Because I would do it. I did get some new tattoos, but not from this random dude. And it was one of those, it was just so sweet. And truly in real time, our whole team, Intentional as a whole, is really sensing, wow, Jesus is doing something in the men, in the fathers specifically, and in the mothers. And this is like a perfect way for me to say, please come to Franklin, Tennessee, April 23rd through the 25th. These are not like events where it's a rah-rah experience in the sense that we're just there to hype you up and send you out. They are transformational worship, deep spiritual moments. And we try to set them up that way. Obviously, we can't do that. All we can do is set a good table and invite the Spirit. But truly, there's something beautiful that happens when all these moms and all these dads basically say, I want to serve Jesus and I want to do it my whole life. And so it was really, really beautiful. It was very, very encouraging. It was very, very overwhelming. And I think in real time, there's talks of more, even potentially this calendar year. And that's very stressful to even say out loud. But we are in very real time just praying through what we are to steward. How do we continue to be a blessing? And so please, if you don't have tickets, you can obviously check out the show notes for that as far as the motherhood retreat goes, but that I can't wait for that. And that's happening. I'm so excited. You're in full prep mode right now for that.
Oh, I feel like once we get close like this, my mind is just like a buzz. It's like hard to sleep sometimes of like all the creative ideas flowing, but I'm so excited about what's coming together, who's coming. Some people we haven't even announced yet. I think it's just gonna, they're all unique and special. But I feel particularly really excited about this one.
Yeah, I do too. I really do. And doing it in Nashville, specifically Franklin area, is just such a gift, such a beautiful place. And one other just life update, very important. I think it cannot be missed, but, you had pseudo emergency back surgery, in the midst of all this in the last couple of weeks, and you're sitting here now, but wow, that was not for the faint of heart. Yep. Maybe just give the 2 seconds of what surgery you had. I know a lot of people have been praying for you. A lot of people have been asking, okay, what's going on? What's your status? And it's an ongoing journey. This is not like, oh, you had surgery and now it's fixed. There's more to come. But I just wanted to also say, before we talk about sex and before we talk about intimacy, let's talk about
the spine.
Yeah. Which is actually necessary in that activity. Yeah.
For all the curious detail people of whom I am also one, I had an L5-S1 discectomy. That's a hard word to say.
Yep.
And once the surgeon got in there, it was like far worse than anyone thought it was. Literally had a nerve wrapped around a disc. which definitely shows why I was in so much pain. So grateful to have that fixed. It will be a much longer recovery than we thought because of how bad it was. So the nerves just take a long time. But I'm feeling better than I did before surgery. I actually just met with a surgeon today to talk about the next surgery that will probably be in June. That one will be more intense than this one. But honestly, I just feel so profoundly grateful. Like, this has been a long journey, 6 years of intense chronic pain with some answers, but no solutions that that have worked. And so to have a surgical option that now, with all the information we have, will help significantly, honestly feels like we've been asking God for healing for so long. And I feel like it was a couple years ago where we started specifically praying, God, I don't care how you do it, whether it's miraculous healing or you bring the right doctor or the right medication or whatever it is. And so this honestly, it feels like a direct answer to that prayer, that God brought us this incredible neurosurgeon and another doctor who figured out, oh, there actually also is a structural problem that we could fix that could help a lot. And so I think it's reminded me again, like, we often pray in these narrow-minded directions because we're human, because we want the fix that feels like it would be the best. And sometimes that idea of God, like, changing our hearts to his, or just redirecting our trust structures and control structures. And sometimes he answers prayer just differently than we originally prayed. And still being able to look back, that idea of that command in the scriptures that says, remember, like, to look back and to remember, look what God did then, look what God did then. And even for me today, I was sitting in the surgeon's office, just like trying to remember, like, this is actually something we prayed for. And I think those moments are what build our faith. I was just right after that appointment, took Scarlett to another appointment. And she was telling me, she's like, remember when I was really upset on Saturday night? I was like, no, I don't remember. She goes, you know, and I was really upset. I had a really bad night and you prayed for me. I was like, remind me again, what were you upset about? And then she reminded me, I was like, okay, yeah, yeah. And she told me what I specifically prayed, which I didn't remember at all. And then told me how God had specifically answered that prayer and then another prayer that she'd prayed later in the week. And it's that idea of remembering, like, hey, we prayed this last week. Look what God did. And acknowledging it is such a, I don't know, it changes how we experience the present for sure.
It really, I couldn't say that better. Great job at communicating that. Thank you for sharing as well. And yeah, it's been, I mean, to be fair though, it has been utter chaos.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, we value transparency, authenticity, obviously. And it has been so hard.
I just keep saying it's been a dumpster fire.
Yeah, but it is. But I think it's important. Like, even last week we were supposed to podcast, have this episode and we couldn't even get our heads on straight, primarily because we were arguing so much because of all the different tension points and dynamics that have, I mean, it's just created all these sub tension points that have been, you know, just very, very, very challenging. Suffering, physical suffering is not, it's so sad and painful for the person. And then when you're in an ecosystem of a family, it can have all sorts of different, you know, side effects, which almost just feels like, it feels so unfair. Mm-hmm. Insult to injury. It's like, this is already hard enough, but then for it to mess with every single thing in your family, your kids feel it, our marriage feels it, our family feels it. And so, yeah, it's just been, it has been a trip since basically January. What was it? A couple weeks before January, we were,
I was gonna say 6 years.
No,
but
no, it was January. But, like,
yeah, everything just kind of like got set before, on fire in January.
Mid-January. Yeah. And so it has been crazy. Over here, if you're a person that prays, we know you do. If you wouldn't mind praying for us, we would love that. We would selfishly ask for that. Mm-hmm. And why we want to talk about this particular topic of intimacy, sex, is for lots of reasons. One, it's a huge part of relationship. It's also something that got talked a lot about at the Fatherhood Retreat. Surprise, surprise. And man, the first night we said, hey guys, text in your questions, you know, and they're anonymous, which is great. But you could tell there was, you know, a couple of them coming in and they're pretty benign. And so we kind of doubled down. We're like, listen, if we're going to all be honest and transparent, ask the real questions. Don't just hold back. Now, that doesn't mean crassness. It just means ask what you really are curious about, what you're really struggling with.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just a lot of questions around intimacy, sexual connection, communication. And Justin and I are doing this Q&R on stage live. And afterwards, I come off stage and Elizabeth is telling me, like, I was like crawling out of my skin. I was like drawn, not because you were uncomfortable, but because you're like, I feel like there's so many things I wanted to say to encourage the men or to like give them the lens or angle of how your wife might hear this and see this. And so,
well, of specifically how to communicate with your wife about it. That's what I was like coming out of my skin of, like, I was like, told you I several times, almost just like went up there. Because
I would have taken it as a personal move towards intimacy, but I really wish you would have. No, but
I think it was highlighting to me, and you guys were doing a wonderful job answering the question.
Room for improvement?
No, like there wasn't, I didn't disagree. I didn't disagree with anything you guys were saying, but I was thinking of all the men in the room and I was thinking of all the countless conversations I've had with women on this topic. I was thinking of my own experience. And I it was this eye-opening moment for me and why, like, I don't like talking about this into microphones to however many people listen. But it was this eye-opening moment for me of like, oh my gosh, we have to talk about how a husband and wife can communicate about this topic.
And this, but to be fair, I want to just set everyone at ease. We're not just going to talking about sex. We're going to talk about sex.
Yeah.
So I think it's important because I don't want anyone to be like, ugh. And I want to be honest, like it all starts with communication, but I also just for anyone listening, like hang tight. We are going to do our best to cover as much as we can, but there's so many different facets to this. And honestly, why we wanted to have this conversation here was almost like a follow-up because it was such a rich conversation, so many good questions. And honestly, truly, it's one of the reasons I think so many people, like if you have a chance to come to any of these events, do it because they are these beautiful, sacred moments. There's things that happen in the room that you could never capture in a digital download. But let's just start with, I just want to highlight, well, there's so many things. Just highlight Bible stuff very quickly. Genesis 2:25, naked and unashamed. This is important. This wasn't just physical nudity. You know, I think it's important when we talk about this topic. To really highlight this isn't just about physical nudity. It is about emotional exposure without hiding. And interestingly enough, on one of the nights, Justin and I were teaching, we were doing a handful of points on marriage. And surprise, surprise, I ended up being the one that pulled the short straw to talk about sex yet again. And in all settings, I am the one that has volunteered forcefully to talk about this. But that said, like there's a handful of things from that teaching and from even when you sit down and you want to communicate about something, you think about it deeply. And there's a handful of things that came to my mind that were really important that I even jotted down. And one of them was just, you know, intimacy is that idea of being fully known without fear. And that is a really, really, really tricky place in marriage because you get exposed in all of the ways that you want to and you don't want to. And the gospel, which I love, Tim Keller said it, is to be fully known and fully loved. And really that's what we want to be to each other, to be fully known and fully loved. But to be fair, even you and I have this struggle to be fully known and then fully use all of that information to blast you in a moment of frustration. And that's the trick, you know? And that's the tricky part of all this.
Yes. And I'm thinking of that scripture.
Oh, by the way, there's a dog in the background. So yeah, if anyone's like, what is that animal? What is that bear? That's what that is.
I was thinking of, you know, that scripture in Genesis. They were naked and unashamed. This is pre the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know the story. We know that the shame that immediately entered post the fall, them hiding from God, immediately. It's the first thing they do. Is they're afraid, fear for the first time, and they hide. And so not only do we have like the history of our relationship and really knowing each other and sometimes being very thoughtful and kind about that knowing, and other times not being kind and using it against each other.
This hasn't been the best last 3 months. We have
never happens to us. Just
close access to these examples.
No, but so we have that. Plus we have all the shame from birth leading up until meeting each other that we've experienced, whether that was through our parents, whether that was in friendships, whether that was.
And you're not just saying, it's not even just sexual shame. You're just saying shame,
just
in,
shame
general.
Yeah. In general.
Yeah.
And so, cause you're saying that naked and unashamed, it's not just physical.
No,
nudity. This is not just about sex.
Emotional exposure.
It's that, like, yeah. And so we have all of that coming into not just our relationship, but into sexual intimacy. And that, like, can't, and I think it wouldn't it be just like the enemy to do what he does and to understate that of like, we're not, that's not at the forefront of our premarital counseling or our like conversations as a married couple of like, what shame are you feeling right now? Where, how old is that shame? Where did it come from? We're not talking that way. But the reality is, like, we are living out of that a lot of the time. And so when thinking about, like, what are the things that make this hard, talk, like, actually progressing in sexual intimacy, but also just like being able to communicate it about it.
Well, I want to just say, can I say one of the barriers for men?
Yeah.
That so many men, I'll be blunt, but so many men want physical access without emotional availability. And that part is really tricky because, and for me as well, like, it's so much easier to, we want the physical access because there is a part of this and we have to just say it. So if anyone's sitting here going like, this isn't true, this is so true, not for every single man in the world, but it's so true that men and women do fall in these massive categories of similarity. And one of those is that most men, I won't say all, but most men feel emotionally closer after physical closeness. One of the ways they feel emotionally close is through, and it starts usually with physical closeness. I can't even say how many times I know, like, if I'm like really busy and I'm overwhelmed or I come back from a work trip, you want to talk to feel connected. Mm-hmm. I immediately just want to be somewhere with no clothes on with you specifically. but over time, like, it has been really helpful to know, like, that isn't just because of a sexual desire or need, although there's a part of it. It's actually like, I miss you. I've been lonely. I want to connect with you. And that is one of the ways we connect, and so many men. And so I think it's important to say that. One of the things I know that ends up happening with us, and I would say, let's exclude the last 3 months because this has been really crazy. It's not been a normal 3 months. But in general, is there's a lot of times when we're talking about, okay, when is that moment that we're going to try to connect? When are we going to make space for making love? You will often say, like, I need to sit, and we need to talk for a while before. And so I think there's like a bunch of different, without giving away all the secrets, I think there's a bunch of different ways that you can do that and meet each other in that space. And so it looks like for us sometimes just having longer conversations before that moment, because that's one of the ways that you are motivated and or feel much more closer. And then it's a lot easier to step into that physical space. So I'm not going to speak for women, but I'm just saying for men, that is a very common trait. And that makes it very tricky because we get really angry and we're wondering, why are you not wanting to connect with me? And then a lot of that has to do with the fact that we are not very emotionally available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying. Honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me," God says, "and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you.
Now, I think you're spot on with that. Obviously, there's always the exception, but I think that definitely is the majority. And I think that was so helpful for us discovering that and then learning how to talk about that of, hey, this is what I'm feeling. I'm feeling like I just need some not tension filled, good conversation where I'm reminded that you're interested in me as a person. And me being able to communicate that with you and us being able to kind of compromise together. It's not like, well, just because I need that first means that I get 4 hours of talking. Like, there's a give and take and a talking back and forth. Okay, here's what I'm feeling like I need. What are you feeling like you need? That has, I feel like, unlocked a lot for us. That some of these things where oftentimes there's like all this tension around talking about it, some of the, and I don't want to be formulaic here, but some of the solutions can be quite simple as like learning how, like that's why I was coming out of my skin at the retreat, because I was listening to you guys talk and I was like, I just want to tell these men, like, hey, if you say these three sentences in these, in this tone, she's going to receive that very differently.
So what are they? Give us this. Give us the tea, honey. What
are
you?
You're jumping ahead.
No, I'm not. I'm not trying to jump ahead. Yeah. I'm not trying to jump ahead. I'm saying, you just said there's three phrases. I know there's more we can talk about, but I'm not trying to jump ahead. I'm trying to say,
yeah.
What are so, like, give us just one. Well, like, what do you mean?
I mean, you guys were doing a great job talking about it. And
you're an enigma.
I can't remember exactly how you guys were phrasing it, but you were essentially talking about communicating desire. And I would like this to happen tonight. I need you type of thing.
That's not what we said.
No, some of those words were said.
I guarantee you that is not what I wouldn't say that.
It was said much. It wasn't said by you. It was said much more eloquently.
Justin.
But I was thinking of.
If you hear this, Justin, I'm sorry.
I'll speak for myself. But I think I can speak on behalf of most moms, especially moms of young children. When you're exhausted, when you are being touched all day long by your kids, when you're cleaning, when the work is never done, when the needs are endless, and your husband comes home and says, oh, I just need you so bad. That's not, to you, that feels like I'm communicating desire. That's like inviting. I think there's a lot of moms, especially in the thick of it, they don't hear that as like, oh, he desires me. They hear that as, oh, somebody else needs something from me. Versus if you walk in the door and you're like, hey, I love you so much. And I just love time with you. And I would just love to be physically close to you. What do you need for that to be able to happen? Is that something you feel like you have capacity for? And how can I help make that happen?
So, honey, I just want to say, I love you so much. I want to be physically close to you. So I'm just wondering, what do you need?
So you're practicing. Okay.
I'm not practicing. Okay. I'm serious.
No, but like that is heard from such a different, you're saying the same thing, right? Essentially, you're asking for the same thing. But to me, and I'll just speak for myself, that is, the other one feels like a demand and a pressure. That feels like, I love you and I care for you and I care about our relationship. I care about closeness and I want to help make that happen. And it's I feel much more seen by that than the other. Now, obviously there's some women that might feel very desired by their husband saying that. But the point is, if you can learn, if women can respectfully, calmly, kindly learn how to communicate to their husband, hey, this is helpful. And if the husband can be humble and receive and patient and willing to try to approach her in that way. Again, some of these things are easily unlockable. And on the flip side, for the women, like it's not just all on the men to, I just got to approach it just right. For so many women, I mean, the statistics are 1 in 5 women have been sexually abused in some way. That's a lot. I mean, that's pretty high. You add pornography culture to that for both men and women. You add anybody coming out of purity culture, which had a lot of good intentions, but also a lot of fallout of a lot of messages that were sent to women for years and years and years. Your body is dangerous. Desire is bad. Men can't control themselves. And it's your responsibility for them to be able to control themselves. Yeah. Like a lot of purity culture put all of the pressure and the consequence on women. And so whether or not you were abused or even ever had sex outside of marriage, most women who were raised in the church are carrying some of that. And again, I don't have any ill will towards the leaders in the church at that time and how that came about. They were trying to do a good thing. They weren't trying to hurt women. They were just unaware of the fallout of what that was going to produce and how that was spoken about. And then there wasn't any care for those couples. I mean, and I think this is still true oftentimes, is like, we say, don't have sex, don't have sex, don't have sex before marriage. And then you get married and it's like, no one ever talks about it again. It's all supposed to just be amazing and blissful. And so women, long way of saying, women are carrying a lot of that. And so for a woman to be able to know her own story enough to know how much, what of that she's carrying, and sometimes we need help to figure that out, and to be able to communicate that, and that's that vulnerability piece, like being able to be vulnerable enough to say like, hey, this is messy for me and I want it to be better, but here's the ways that you can help. Because really, in a strong marriage where we are actively serving each other, putting each other first, laying our lives down for each other, if that's going both ways, then we are a huge part of each other's healing. We can wound each other deeply, absolutely, but we can also be a massive agent of healing in each other's stories. And so I think where we get stuck is when we can't talk about those areas of pain, or when we can't talk about like, here's what would help me in communicating about it. And then, and oftentimes when we do try to talk about it, we expect it to just fix things immediately the first time. And really, it takes a really long time.
Hmm. Are you tearing up because it's emotional, or are you tearing up because you know that that's not always fully Arky situation?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, we're sitting here talking about this. Let's just be honest. This is a struggle for us too.
Mm-hmm.
This is a hard thing for me, for you. I do all the things on the list. It's easy for me to withdraw during the week. It's easy for me to be very busy and shut down during conflict, or you shut down. And then you want to avoid vulnerability as a way to protect, but then you expect sexual closeness. Mm-hmm. Now, the hard part is both are really important. Like, one of the ways that you connect again, especially after distance, is physical mm-hmm. intimacy. It's one of the pieces.
And women need that too, even if we don't always have a felt need.
Yeah. And usually women are more responsive than not all women are responsive. Some very much need and desire and have a higher sex drive than their husband. Actually, a ton of questions came in about that. Mm-hmm. I can't say it's my experience, felt experience, but I do know that that is a thing. And I mm-hmm. do know that no matter what your dynamic is, the same is true, that for both parties, it's to stop consuming and start connecting. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the bigger piece that's important, is that whether you want to consume communication or consume physically, mm-hmm. it's actually about the connection. So I think women can sometimes make it, and I can only speak from our experience, so much about communication. I can make it so much about the consumption of the physical experience, but both are actually not the right thing fully. It's actually connecting. And how do we actually do that? And I think it's just an important thing to name and say.
Well, and I think it's also important to note that they all work together and that they all have to be kind of moving towards each other at the same time. It's not like, well, we're not very good at communication and emotional intimacy, so we need to spend the next 3 years in therapy working on emotional intimacy before we're going to have physical intimacy. That's not that. That's not healthy. It's like this symbiotic relationship where it's like they're all working together in tandem. And sometimes you need to work harder on one than the other. But ideally, they should all be working together. But I also think it's really important to note, because this is the conversation in my perimenopause age that I have found myself in, that I'm having with so many women. And I feel like this conversation started happening just as women start having kids, that for women, hormones play such a huge role in our desire or lack of desire, even in the emotional piece.
Yeah.
And I also think it's important for women. Oftentimes our husbands just feel rejected by that. Well, she just doesn't desire me. I know you and I have had to talk about this a lot. Like for you, it feels like rejection. And for me, I'm like, I can't control what's physically happening in my body. It's not that I am rejecting you and I don't want to be close to you. It's that I don't always have that felt need because my hormones are a disaster. But I have to regularly communicate that to you. It's reassurance, just like I need you to communicate to me, hey, I care about who you are as a person and talking to you. And I think the reason I get emotional is not so much, I mean, yeah, we have lots of areas to grow in this. We absolutely do.
I think we should start growing tonight. Like, just think about it. Just, we should.
But I feel like I'm just conveniently ignoring.
Yeah. That. And I just can't help but let it go. Yeah. Uh-huh. Keep going. Yeah.
But I do think if there's one thing that we've grown in, even in the last couple of years, is learning how to communicate it better. I remember years ago, I started telling you, I can't only communicate this topic about it. Words are hard. I can't only communicate about this topic from a negative perspective. That for me is super hard.
About what needs to be better and how, yeah. It can be, like what we need to
or
talk
I'm
about.
Or I'm frustrated and yeah. I don't like how this is going. And I think that's kind of what started us talking about this more. I was like, every time we talk about it, it's because we're either in an argument about it or there's some negative thing about it. And I just need us to change. We can still talk about it. We can still talk about the things that are hard, but I need us to change the tone in which we're talking about it. Because for me, it felt like, well, I'm just disappointing you. I'm failing you, which is not what you were saying.
No.
But some of the tone behind it just made me feel that way. So I feel like over the years, we have found better ways to communicate about it. I think some of the emotion comes from knowing so many people who...
Our dog is snoring. I apologize. Yes. Django. Django. Stop snoring, dude.
But knowing so many people who stay stuck in not being able to get past the first conversation.
Yeah.
And women who are silently suffering, men who are either silently suffering or men who are just angry. And and so I think the emotion comes from like, and then the desire to do this episode is like, if we can help in any way, help people be able to take the first steps in being able to talk about it.
Yeah. And a couple details, maybe just some practicals, I think that's helpful. I'd say one thing that's very important, find different ways that you like connecting. I know like for Elizabeth, it's easier, as she's already said, to connect physically after there's been connection. Like a total hybrid that's not TMI. It's like, hey, how can we talk with little to no clothing on? That's a very fun, like, how do we do that? Like, it's a compromise right in the middle. Like, let's talk. And obviously, it's a lot easier to move to intimacy in that particular way if, you know, there's not many clothes on. So that's helpful.
That's your strategy, huh?
It's not my strategy. What are you talking about? Girl, I have strategy all day. Let me say something to any of your wives listening to. Your husband's not disappointed in you or your body. Or, I mean, maybe that's the case. Rarely, and maybe your husband has said dumb stuff and forgive him or try to, and he needs to ask for forgiveness. But the majority of husbands are not walking around judging you, your physicality, even what you look like other women are to you. And I need to say this, that so many women get dressed for other women. So many women are in shape for other women. Mm-hmm. It is not because you're trying to get some other dude. You already got one and you're like not interested in trying to find another. And it's not for your husband all the time because he's actually quite happy with who you are and he's attracted you in all sorts of ways. I find it so funny when women will jump on social media and be like, my husband just loves like when my hair's up in a bun and I'm like in sweatpants and like I have no makeup on. I'm like, yes, because that's the real you. And the other one is too. And of course there's beauty and go on dates, but like that, what attracts a man to a woman physically and non-physically or even the emotional side is so little to do with how you feel about your body and what you're feeling. And so just remember, like, it is so much easier than you realize. And maybe you do realize, so good job on you. It is so much easier than you realize to bless and satisfy your husband. He's pretty easy to please. He's pretty easy to, even in that world, it's like you can bless him in a deep way by just having some more conversations around this, and not even availability, because I don't want to put pressure, because availability for everyone and frequency looks different for everybody. But you give a gift when you start talking about it and communicating needs. And I just want to say this because I want to hand this to you, talking about just a word to the wives. And please stop listening to people that talk about, on these types of platforms, that talk about their sexual frequency and use that as a metric to why you should be having more sex. If you hear anybody talking on social media or any of these platforms and they say, well, this is what we do, and then you internalize that as expectation of what should happen in your world, shame on you for not having the discernment to go, every situation is different. Mm-hmm. Every marriage is different. Every story is different. Every sex drive is different. Every stage is different.
Yes, yes, yes.
And so if you are hearing this right now, and you're like, we just had kids and like, I'm dying, and intimacy is like, it's not like it was before you're married. Duh. And guess what? It's going to continue
to shift.
Before
you were married.
Sorry.
Before kids.
Before kids.
That's what he meant, folks.
Truth be told, I was a virgin when I got married, so I don't have that situation. But nonetheless, but I would just say, before you had kids, thank you for the clarification. And yes, and it will continue to evolve and get used to the evolution and the discovery and the change, because it only will continue to change. And that is the only real thing. Couple bullet points for practicals, because I hate when people talk about this in theory and don't and aren't practical. In general, consistency is the goal for you, for us, for most couples. Anyone like generally would say once, twice a week. That's like a general consistent. There's a consistent rhythm to that. There's stages where that's like happening more, and there's stages when it's happening less. I think the main thing is that you're trying to make space for this beautiful part of your marriage. Secondly, don't listen to the outside world about what good sex is. When people say you need to have good sex, that's a really tricky thing, because what does that mean? What is defined as good sex? Mm-hmm. You have to be so careful about that. I think the main thing is, are you serving each other in a way that each other feel loved and satiated physically and emotionally? And so that takes conversation. That takes compromise. That takes compromise. Yeah. Half the time I'm like, let's both go. You're like, how about no? And I'm like, I'm willing to serve, you know? And the truth is, though, like, sometimes it's not a blessing to you. Sometimes it's not a blessing. I don't know any guy that's like, I'll pass on an orgasm tonight. I just want to bless you. Now, some, that's the case. But I would just say, find what is a blessing to the other person. And then that's the win. That's the goal. It's not what other people talk about. So take that pressure off, and also serve the other. And lastly, because the guys, I want to just respond to this to any guy that might be listening that was at the fatherhood retreat, or men that are in this situation. If you have a lower sex drive than your wife, the same is true for you that it is for me. Just like I need to, if I have a higher sex drive, just like I need to be aware that I will probably not have sex as much as I want to. Elizabeth knows in our situation, she would probably have sex more than she naturally feels like she needs it. Same is true. Like you, that means you need to serve your wife in these ways. Like she might need that more than you do. And the goal isn't to like always have to be putting out, so to speak. The goal is to be fair and to serve and to love. So anyway, those are just a couple bullet points as we move on.
Yeah, again, I'm thinking you have to talk about it. That idea of like not looking to, here's what somebody else said once, that said is the healthy amount, or the, but like what you were saying about different seasons, different stages, different ages, different hormones that are happening. Like that's where communicating about it makes me think of, and I think we put it in our notes somewhere here, but that idea of expectations need to be spoken clearly, agreed upon, and what is it?
Repeated.
Clear, spoken, agreed upon. And then I always add repeated, because we need reminders, you know, but, that absolutely applies here of like, how often does a man have an expectation? A woman has an expectation, but we've never made it clear. We've never both agreed upon it, especially if you're going to like try a rhythm of talking about it, try a rhythm of connecting in that way. It has to be this clear, spoken, agreed upon thing, like, hey, we're going to try. Instead of like, I'm expecting it's going to look one way. I'm expecting Brooke is always going to come in the door and he's going to ask me these three questions that I like to be asked. Like if we haven't agreed upon that, then it's an expectation that's going to immediately lead to a resentment, which is an intimacy killer.
Mm-hmm.
So that is so important in this topic of like, and even sitting down together in a non-judgmental way of like, hey, what are your expectations in this season? And here are mine. And are they similar at all? Are they way off from each other? How can we bridge the gap? Or maybe they're really similar with minor differences. But that can just be incredibly helpful. I'll say too, because we haven't, I feel like, gone quite deep enough in this yet, is to the, I don't even want to just say woman, because men have been abused too.
Absolutely, but
if
yeah.
If abuse is in your story, I feel like we can add more to that list. If abuse is in your story, if some sort of sexual sin or...
Even sexual addiction.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is in your story, which we now know from neuroscience, from incredible therapists. Like there is so much more to that act that is emotional, psychological, deeply felt needs that weren't met. But if that is in your story somewhere, anywhere, it could be long, like distant past. That is such a, it's something we want to be so aware of because it's so tender and it massively affects relationship and especially sexual intimacy. And I would just encourage you, if that is you and your spouse doesn't know the gravity of it, doesn't understand the gravity of how much it's on your mind, how much it's impacted you. Maybe you don't even know, but you just know it probably does. Again, back to what I said towards the beginning of like, we can be an agent of healing in each other's stories. And especially if you have any sort of foundation of a healthy marriage, if you have a spouse who you know that you actually could be safe with if you opened up. And I know that for everybody listening, that's not always,
not
the,
always
case.
The case.
But if you can, you need to find ways, even if it's with help, even if it's you're in a therapist's office and you bring your husband in for a session because you're like, I can't talk about this by myself. Whatever it might be, it is so important for our spouses to know that and to be educated in it themselves so that they can be tender and so that they can help, not hurt. Because I truly believe most spouses are good-willed.
Yeah.
And we don't always treat each other like we're good-willed. But at the end of the day, if we peel back the layers, we peel back the layers of hurt, most spouses are good-willed. And so really believing like, okay, my husband is a good-willed man. My wife is the good-willed woman. She doesn't want to add to this pain. So I have to be brave enough to let her in, let him in to some of this pain. And we need to work through this together. The idea of two becoming one, that is not like I guard part of my story, he guards part of his. And like every once in a while we talk about it, but then we separate again.
No,
it's you're living your stories together.
Yeah. To maybe just, so you're talking about healing.
Yeah.
I want to talk about hurting really quick. And what I mean by that is like, you said we can be agents of healing. And I just want to say, I felt like this nudge of the spirit. So I'm going to say it. So I hope if this is helpful, the spirit will apply it to your life. If you're using sex as a tool to manipulate, to get what you want, or withholding sex as a punishment in your marriage, male or female, I just want to lovingly rebuke you right now and help you see that that is so destructive to your relationship. And I cannot tell you how important it is to identify that. Now, there might be reasons where sexual intimacy might be challenging or hard, but I just need to say that because I've, as a pastor for so many years, and even in the work we do, I cannot tell you the countless stories I hear of people that are in sexless marriages because one of the spouses has decided, like, I can't and will not. And then the hard part is in our moment. Now we have a lot of really good language around it. Maybe there's active therapy and you know that maybe taking a break is good. And everyone's story is different. Everyone's situation is different. So I'm not going to apply and say, oh, your story doesn't allow that. For some, you absolutely do need to have seasons of breaking away and stopping. But the Bible's so clear. Do like only neglect this part of your relationship for a season to what? Be given to prayer. And if you are doing that for years at a time, your relationship is breaking down in such a deep way. And I just have to say it. you are only hurting your current self and your future marriage in every single way. It is imperative that you figure out and learn how to talk about this. And I just want to give practical tools on that. It can just start as something as simple as being like, I don't know how to talk about this, but I really want to. Do you want to learn how to talk about this better? And start there. Bring in the right people. If that's a therapist, a trusted person, like you need to do that. With guys, I would say go to your dudes that you know that you can trust. If you have that set up, if you don't, set it up and start talking to your friends about like, hey, I'm not good at this. This is my situation. How do I do this? Don't do this alone. And I say that so sternly and specifically because I've seen so many people suffer in this silence because it doesn't feel okay to talk about in these sexless marriages. And they're suffering in the sense of like, they're, because sex is also connected so emotionally, right? So they're just hurting in all their multiple ways. And so if that's your story, I just want to encourage you, move towards health. And that might just be starting to talk about it. But this, if you are married, is an essential piece and component. And I have so many stories even connected to me, not my personal story, but very close to me, of the damage that sexless marriages can cause. And it is just staggering. And so I just say that off the high horse now. I'm off of it, or the box of soap, whatever it is. But I can't tell if you're looking at me. Are you like disagreeing with what I'm saying? Or are you just looking at your Bible?
No, I'm agreeing with you, and I'm about to back it up with scripture.
Oh, I couldn't tell. I was like, you, this is a study face, or like, what are you doing?
But, so let me read it, but then I will try to unhook some of our minds from how this has been taught in the past. We've all heard this, 1 Corinthians 7:4, the wife does not have authority over her own body, but yields it to her husband. But this part's important. I think sometimes we just think the verse only says that. Then it says, in the same way, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but yields it to his wife. So you think about, we tend to separate those two of like, a wife doesn't have control of her own body. She needs to give it to her husband. Her husband actually has control over it. But
I don't think anyone says that.
No one says that overtly, but like, but I think there's pressure that a lot of women feel, you know? But that idea in the very same verse, it's husbands and wives, and that idea that they are yielding to each other. And when I think like what came to my mind was, and I'd love to study like what the Greek word for yield is, but I just think of like the big yield signs. It means slow down, slow down, look around, cautiously see if anybody's coming into the intersection, you're yielding to anything else that might be coming. And so when I think of that idea of like a husband and wife yielding to each other, that idea of mutual submission, that idea of laying down your life for each other, like laying down your life for a friend, like think about the ultimate picture of marriage, friendship. That is what we are called to do.
Absolutely.
And I'll never forget, I heard, I think it was John Tyson was teaching on Ephesians 5 that talks about wives submitting to their husbands. But he taught the whole message on the husband. And he was explaining that actually the call to the men is so much more intense to lay down your life for, he has a great accent, lay down your life for her as Christ does the church. And the whole message was actually pretty hard on men. But what he was trying to do is he was trying to paint this picture of like, we get all hung up on like the woman having to submit again, because, you know, obviously culturally and how it's been taught. But we forget about the fact that what woman wouldn't respond calmly, graciously, respectfully to a man who is literally every day and everything he's doing, laying down his life for her. And that's beautiful. Like that's the picture of what Jesus does for us. And what do we want to do in the safety of the Holy Spirit and just the ministry of the Spirit and God the Father, knowing he loves us like we're his little children. Like when we feel truly safe with God, we want to follow him. We want to be close to him. We want to have connection. We want to spend time in the Word, not out of obligation, but out of relationship and desire and safety. And so obviously we're talking about what is the most perfect picture of this type of intimacy in marriage. It's that. But that is God's heart. It's not for this to be tainted and hard and harsh.
Yeah.
And we're not going to get it fully this side of heaven. But for any husbands, and I hope there are husbands and wives listening to this together, of like, that's what we hope to slowly inch our way towards, that type of relationship where we are yielding to each other in everything. But this verse is specifically talking about physical intimacy.
Which, well said, honey. Well said. And your dad would be so proud. Just so proud. Immediately, just like my little theologian.
Yeah. Except for it wasn't memorized and able to be quoted perfectly, but you know, always room for improvement.
They got their own stuff. I was going to say just another note that's really important here on all of this. You know, we're talking about all of this, but I really feel like part two is coming. If you would like a part two, here's what I'd love. Social media or hello@intentionalparents.org. Would you please email us? Let us know. Please tell us, would you like us to do a series on this? That would just be helpful.
Are you volunteering me to do an entire series on this topic?
I think you are more equipped than you realize. I've said so many jokes. I am withholding myself.
Good job.
Wow.
Well done. Also, our 8-year-old is going to be home in a minute and we are recording in our home. This would be a funny topic for her to walk in on.
How did you get here, honey?
We should probably wrap up pretty soon.
So let me just say this. Man, I want to say this to you. Your purity, your eyes, your life, it's your responsibility. It's not your wife's. And what I mean by that is you have to be so careful to not manipulate your wife and say, well, I just want to stay pure. So I need to do this with you. Like, oh man, that is not her problem in full. I want to say it starts with you, with integrity. Who are you? Do you have accountability, confession, a community where you can be honest? So I want to say all that. I will also say on that same note, your purity is your problem in the best sense. It is your responsibility. I only said problem because purity, problem, it works well.
Alliteration's back, baby.
But wives listening, you can be a huge gift to your husband in the arena of purity, because although it should never be used as a tool to manipulate to get what you want, that desire, that drive, that desire to connect in all the ways physically and spiritually is a good one, and it is fulfilled in marriage. And when you have a husband who is wanting to honor his own purity, his own life, his own desires with you, just understand that you can hurt that or help that. That is, again, not your responsibility. It is not, and I don't want to like aid bad theology or bad ideas. It's to practically say, this is a service. This is how we serve and love one another.
Well, to maybe hone in and make it a little more clear, what I hear you saying is to your husband's fight for purity. If you have a husband who is actively fighting,
absolutely.
I want to live in purity, and I am.
Absolutely.
But you can be, again, that idea of serving each other, helping each other, coming alongside each other. Your husband is actively in that fight saying, I am committed to this fight. Yeah. You can be a huge source of help.
Absolutely.
And if that is not the case, and there's deep wounding there, and there's trust that has been broken time and time again, then you need help.
Yeah, yes,
and all of us need help. And a couple, maybe 2 years ago, our church did a whole, I was so proud of our church. We don't always talk about this kind of stuff. We did a whole series on, we, meaning the leadership of our church, did a series on sexual purity, and had brave men and women, couples, get up and share honest stories. I was like, wow, this is like.
It was gritty in a good way.
Yeah.
In a good way.
And then out of it,
it's real.
Our church is involved with a ministry called Pure Desire, and they launched Pure Desire groups.
It was beautiful.
And it was just, I feel like it shifted the culture of our church of like to see people who had been needing help for a long time.
Yeah.
Be like, oh, I can get help. This is not the end of my story. There's help right here for me. This is at least a place to start.
Yeah.
And there is talk about trying to eliminate shame. Like that is, sometimes we have to let ourselves feel the weight of embarrassment and shame to be able to move past it. But that is how you get free, is to say, no, I'm not living under this anymore. I'm not living under the anger, the resentment, the shame.
Absolutely.
But in reality, like both both parties need to be cared for.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Practical steps this week. Have one honest, calm conversation about expectations, desires, and the areas that healing's needed. That's a big one.
Yeah.
And just try that this week. Just try a couple other practical things. I think husbands, you could definitely say this to your wives. Ask your wife what helps you feel safe with me emotionally and physically. Mm-hmm. Initiate non-sexual affection, both husband and wife. I think affection, I know this. I mean, we have these silly, what are the words, rituals that are so dumb and they are so reassuring. When we get up in the morning, no matter where we are, no matter how bad the friggin' fight was the night before, this morning was another one. We embrace, I kiss your head. And it's not because I even want to, although I do. It's not because you even want me to, because most of the time you don't. It's a ritual to say, I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. And what are your rituals? Find them. Mm-hmm. Find a little one to do. What is the little thing that just between you guys that you do? And then last, pray together, even if it's brief, even if it's God, just help our marriage. Mm-hmm. Like prayer begins to do beautiful things. And I want to say, to tease this out entirely, we have some wonderful resources coming out for marriages this year with Intentional. And we have a lot in store for what we're doing with pouring into marriages as an organization. But if you want more of this, if this has been helful, would you let us know? hello@intentionalparents.org. Email us there. Social media, check it out. But thank you for following along in this journey. There's so many topic, you know, other things we could have, you know, talked about, but I think we'll land the plane here today. Mm-hmm. But thank you for listening. We'll be back next week.